62.
Welcome to Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast, the broadcast that actually is what scientists are looking for when they're looking for dark matter. He's Ed Sorbo from Linden.
That's just because we're both wearing dark pants and black shirts.
No, dude, we're the stuff that holds the universe together. That's us, dude.
Or we could say that our mass is so great it's nearly incalculable.
Incalculable. No, that's just our genius or the density of our skulls, depending on whether you're a fan or you don't like us. And speaking of who us is?
No, that's good. That works.
It's not bad. Yeah. It's not bad at all. Yeah. Right? He's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering. Ed is the dark matter of suspension knowledge. You can find him on the interweb thing at le-suspension.com. I'm Michael Gugis. You can find my rantings, which I want to talk to you about, on the web at Motorbike
Road. Michael just hijacked my laptop while I was in the bathroom, and he put the bookmark for his blog first on my bookmark page, moving my YouTube channel and MotoGP.com off the screen.
How many more pictures of people's cats or videos of people's cats do you need to look at? You can find my blog at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com and be grateful there's not a picture of me naked on your computer screen as a backdrop right now, because I carry one of those around with me at all times. You never know what's going to be useful. No, a picture of me naked. Don't you? What's wrong with you people? let's see. What we're going to talk about.
Today's topic review the aliens.
Right, but before we get there, we're going to talk about something that's actually on my my blog, which is the last few days I've been writing about production racers, production GP racers. And I was entirely...
Production GP racers.
Production GP race bikes.
Okay, so the bikes like the TZ250.
The one that you can buy... RS. It comes in a crate. You write them a check. They send you a bike. Yep. You go race it. Okay, and a couple of things have popped up about that. I mentioned that in World Super in my blog. I pointed out that World Superbike. You can still do that. You can buy a race bike from Aprilia on RoadRacingWorld.com, which should be your first stop after Deep Thinking.
Yeah, but that's only Aprilia's doing that right
no,
now.
No, I was going to say Ducati does that too.
Okay, but those are just street bikes without all the stuff.
Honest to God race bikes. Ducati.
Because, you know, we don't have GP classes anymore. So they don't make production GP bikes anymore like they used to.
What do you mean they don't have GP classes?
Well, we used to have 125, 250, and 500 right. GP.
Well, they have MotoGP bikes.
The MotoGP is Moto, and they just kept the GP.
Right.
Right, a Moto2 bike is a 600 Super Sport engine,
right,
with whoever makes the chassis,
right,
and the Moto3 is a dirt bike engine in some other chassis.
Not anymore. It's not the same. They're not cheap.
I didn't say they were cheap. They're single cylinder dirt four strokes. That's a dirt bike engine.
Well, for $400,000, I better get something other than a dirt bike engine. Like I said, on RoadRacingWorld.com, just talked about a guy who's going to be doing a World Superbike, and it's purchased bikes. Ducati actually kept World Superbike alive for a long time by selling, customer spec bikes. You know, you go buy one, and you can go race it. And that's why Sylvain Guintoli is world champion. He lost his factory rides, but he was able to find satellite team rides on bikes that were good enough to put the bike on the podium in the dry and for him to win in the wet. And that got Aprilia's attention, and that got him back into the factory bike, and that's why he's world champion. But I digress.
No kidding.
Didn't you... It's one of my charms. Didn't you do a project with USGPRU when you went down and popped a bike out of a crate, put it together, and raced it?
No, that was Road Racing World, but I wasn't involved in it.
That was Himmel... That was Himmelsbach. But yeah, those were the days when you could buy a bike in the crate, race it with only the stuff that's in that crate, and go racing. You know, that's something that I think
big problem that we're having in the road racing world of trying to figure out what the best way to have our series is run and all that stuff,
right,
is people pining for how it used to be.
Well,
you know, get over it. It's not the way it was anymore.
Of course,
the economy's different. The bikes are different. Everything's different. You got to race in the here and now. You can't race in the past. I mean, that's not true. You can race in the past. the big international vintage race
right.
at Phillip Island is right. just wrapping up, and it was fantastic, and a lot of people had a great time.
But
good for them.
You know,
but that's not national level pro racing.
Right. But you got to make bikes available is the point, no matter when you're
but
doing
bikes
it.
Bikes are available. You go down to the dealership, and you can choose any number of bikes that are perfectly good for racing. You know, the thing that pisses me off about Superbike, people are always going, oh, we got to have Superbike as a premier class. That bike's not Superbike. Look it, motherfucker. You go buy an R1, and you take it back in time, what, 5 years, and it crushes every Superbike there was. The fucking thing comes with the trick brakes you used to dream about
right.
and the trick radiator.
Right.
You know what Superbike was? Superbike was putting the shit on a bike that it should have had
in the first place.
Now you can buy bikes that have that stuff. Stop complaining about the name of the class and enjoy the quality of the racing.
Couldn't agree more.
But the purpose of today's episode number 61 is to review the 2015 MotoGP series
right.
season,
right.
specifically the Aliens.
Right.
And we're going to keep you on track if I have to duct tape your ass to that chair.
Who do you want
to talk about first?
What kind of duct tape are we going to use?
I'm going to use the full-on leaves, the goo behind part.
Last night I was at Cost Plus World Market. There's a sign that said,
don't care.
Wine is like duct tape. It fixes everything.
It does.
Okay, Aliens. What about
Aliens? So let's start with Rossi.
Okay.
So how did Rossi's year go?
Reasonably well for a guy.
It did.
Reasonably well.
He is the quintessential example of what you know, you make it worse by freaking out about it.
I want to duct tape that thing.
It's my business.
I know. It's just that
noise. He had the fantastic season for the old guy, right?
Right.
He doesn't have the speed anymore
right.
to win. He can't beat Lorenzo up and up.
Right.
Right. He can't beat Marquez up and up. Right. When everybody's perfect, everything's going fine. Rossi's not as fast as he used to be.
Right.
And it makes sense. He's 30 something years old. He's been doing it for a long time. The battery starts to run down. But every time it took a little more guile, it took a little more thinking, it took take advantage of the situation, starting with what's the race in South America? Brazil, right?
Oh, right. Argentina.
Where on the airplane flying down there, he knows it's going to have to be the hard rear tire.
Right.
He hates the hard rear tire, but he puts that in. Okay, that's what I got to do. It's going to suffer all the time. They practice with the hard rear tire from the beginning, and look what happened.
He
was like so far back you couldn't see him.
Right.
And he went onto the win. And so he did that, and that kept him in contention, and fantastic.
What's he saying? Old age and treachery can overcome youth and enthusiasm.
Exactly. It would have been perfect if he just had it melted down at the very end there and ruined the season.
Yeah.
I read about how many celebration things that Yamaha had to cancel because of all of that.
Oh, that's so sad.
Well, remember us talking about how cool it would be for Yamaha, first and second in the championship, the greatest second place of all time? Could have been Rossi, and then he spoiled all of that. And Yamaha literally had at least two events where him and Lorenzo were going to be doing stuff at the track, and they just canceled it because it was too painful.
Speaking of Lorenzo, a brief digression.
We can talk about him a lot.
Yeah, we're going to, but we're going to throw in right now the helmet. He's changed helmet brands.
Yeah, he's changed helmet brands. Gee, there's a surprise.
Ben, you know, it's the Ben Spies curse. Ben's HJC had a problem when he was racing.
Dude, when your helmet fogs up,
you're
fucking
screwed.
Horrible.
You're screwed.
And if you guys are going to go race at Laguna Seca, your helmet will fog in the morning at Laguna every time. Even your helmet that never fogged anywhere else, be ready in the morning at Laguna.
So, brief aside, we were having a discussion when Ben had his problem with the HJC helmets. Some of my friends asked the question, how much can they possibly be paying him? Well, during Ben's lawsuit with his agent, some of those figures came out, and they said his helmet and leathers deal is worth an estimated $1.1 million. My friend Kevin sent us a picture. It said, for $1.1 million, I'd wear this on my head. And it was a picture of a dude with a plastic bucket strapped to his skull.
Yeah, well, that's not going to do the job.
Nope.
This is the interesting point, that helmets aren't just about protecting you when you crash.
Right.
They're about giving you a quiet, calm zone. So quiet for your ears, you know, you're not blasting you with noise. And then a calm pocket of air in front of your eyes, so you're not blinking all the time.
So you can see
focus.
Well. You can think about what you're doing.
And Lorenzo closes all of his vents and wants it to be as calm as possible and fits in perfect. Well, everybody wears earplugs.
Not everybody.
Everybody who races wear earplugs.
Everybody who races should wear earplugs.
All of the guys we're talking about wear earplugs.
In other words, all of the listeners of Deep Thinking.
Of the pro racers, all of the people who have... You go to the track one time and you put earplugs and you go, oh, fuck, this is so much better.
Oh, my God, dude, right?
All the smart people wear earplugs on the street. Remember,
right.
You're reducing the total amount of noise completely, all of it.
Right.
And therefore, the differences between the sounds are now recognizable. And that's why earplugs work so well. So anyway, I think we covered Rossi.
Right.
Right? And that's the highlight of his thing is... He did the old age in treachery. He used those
skills. Absolutely.
The best of it. And then he melted himself down.
You use the skills that you have at any given time. And he did a very good job at that right up to the very end.
Lorenzo is the classic.
Are we talking about Lorenzo now?
Yes.
He got a new helmet deal.
He did. Lorenzo is the classic example of what happens when you are perfect.
Correct me.
Right? So you have to have a balance in the world, right? If you're good at something, you're not so good at something else, right? So the genius guy can never find his car keys, right? We all know about this. And so for Lorenzo to be so perfect, when he is perfect, nobody can touch him. But the balance of that is that he then crashes on the outlap in the rain when he switches bikes because he wants to be so perfect, right? Or his helmet flogs and it costs a huge amount of time.
It's just a narrower range. It's a narrower operating window.
Yep.
The guy from Pirelli, when we were talking about tires, the compounding guy, who said, look, I can build a tire that only Marquez can ride. I can absolutely build you a tire that only Marquez can ride because he's the only guy who can get it into that operating range and keep it there. You know, he says, but the problem is you're not Marquez and I can't sell that tire to you because you're going to think it's horrible.
So the other character in the Lorenzo and Rossi review is the motorcycle. Clearly, Yamaha's bike was better than the Honda this year in that it was more consistent and it had... It seems that the problem with the Honda was most people are saying, people who know, are saying that the mass of the crankshaft was too light. And so the power is more explosive and the slowing down is more abrupt.
That was the problem.
And so then the electronics have to cut more to deal with that, which then takes away power. So the Yamaha had better acceleration on average because the power was smoother. And we had a bunch of times where I talked about listening to the Yamaha come on to the power.
Right.
Early in the corner, which is an audible example of that, especially compared to the Ducati. Remember, the Yamaha goes boop, and the Ducati goes boop, boop every time. And the Honda just sounded more violent all the time. So Yamaha's riders, of course, because it's been the same guys, helping to shape the direction of the development. And Yamaha has always developed more user-friendly package.
Yeah, Lorenzo's been with them for 6 years now.
A long time.
Yeah.
And Rossi for longer than that. But if you go back to the 500 GP days in the beginning, back to Roberts, the Yamaha was a more user-friendly package than Spencer's Honda. It's always been that way.
Speaking of which, just, again, a brief digression. You must have pulled something by rolling your eyes. You know, you're right. And it's really funny to talk about how Honda keeps trying new things. And sometimes it works spectacularly. Sometimes nobody knows which way the bike went. A lot of times it fails, too.
Yep.
A couple of years ago when Marquez was destroying the field and everybody was like, we got to slow the Honda down. It's not fair. They have too many resources, blah, blah. Yank, yank, yank. You know, all that bullshit. You've been a Road Racing World. In the office, they've got the kitchen. They've got all the covers of some of the cool magazines. And they've got all the covers all over the walls in there. And it's funny to stand there because it's like a timeline. It's like this snapshot of 20 years of racing. And it's like Honda destroys the competition. What happened to Honda?
Yeah.
Honda destroys the competition. What happened to Honda? You know,
well, that's Yamaha. Part of the engineering philosophy,
right?
That back at the factory, and they Honda uses racing engineering to train engineers to make mistakes,
and they want them to try new things. The variation of the Yamaha.
But this is a review of the riders,
right?
And so now let's talk about riders.
Okay, well, the variation in the bike is very minimal, so we actually get to see the riders and their talent come to the fore. Is when with the Yamaha, which is kind of their philosophy too.
So the big surprise this year was Marquez, right? After dominating the previous season, everybody like you expected him to just continue dominating.
Right.
And that's crazy, right?
Because
you can't.
I mean, I'm crazy. I'll grant that.
That kind of domination against those kind of guys.
But you don't
to go on forever.
But you don't expect to see that kind of drop in the
but
performance.
But you just timeline Honda's
and I didn't,
fluctuation. Historically.
But you know why I didn't see it coming?
Because you're blinded by your love for Marquez.
No, well, I do. Like Herb, what's his name, said, the guy from Tech 3, the guy's a volcano. He's one of the people that you would watch Marquez ride around the track by himself just to go, he's never coming out of that corner.
I watch Lorenzo ride around by himself.
But that's it's a more subtle thing. But no, what I didn't see was within the rules package, how the bike would vary so much from year to year. And because
I don't think it had to do, well, the rule package affected that in that they couldn't correct whatever the error was during the season. If it really was that the crankshaft is too light, well, that's relatively easy to fix.
Right.
You don't even have to change the crankshaft. You just put some weights on the thing somewhere.
I didn't see that big of a variation in the bike. I'll be perfectly
clearly
honest.
Clearly, nobody saw it. Honda didn't see it. Okay, so I found it really interesting that the change in the Honda had such a big effect on Marquez and less of an effect on Pedrosa. It's a great example of the difference in their riding. Pedrosa rides a lot more like Lorenzo.
Mm-hmm.
So the extremes of these four would be Marquez on the wild side, Lorenzo on the perfect side.
Right.
And then Rossi and Pedrosa kind of in the middle.
Well, Pedrosa closer to Lorenzo's.
Definitely Rossi has the ability to go more crazy than Pedrosa did. But Pedrosa sure did show plenty of crazy in that battle with Rossi at Argonne.
Yeah, didn't he though?
At the end of the year, right? So, you know, on a different day, they can move back and forth. But specifically, the two different styles on that bike with a problem, clearly the smoother style was better able to adapt to them. And that makes sense, right? If you're on the freaking ragged edge all the time and they screw that bike up for you
a little bit,
it's not too far to on your head, right?
Right.
On the ragged edge.
Exactly.
Whereas if you have a little in reserve, then
it's not so bad.
Blows you up less.
And you know, what's his name? Pedrosa's also very light. So the bike was better able to deal with what was going on simply because it was the electronics and the engine were trying to control
less mass. Well, I
think
that's a big key of it, right?
I don't know
how much his weight really does that so much, but, you know, maybe his electronics guy has a slightly different outlook than Marquez's electronics guy.
Speaking of which, I digress. No.
Well, but hang on, though. I think a little bit more, too. Marquez still wants the bike to do what he wants to do.
Right.
And Pedrosa, having done this for longer,
much longer,
is more inclined to be like, okay, well, I got to change this
What needs to change here?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like you said, Mark is still young. He's still learning how to. I mean, clearly he can
adapt.
He's going to
be something next year from what he learned this year.
Clearly he can adapt to different machines because, and this is, you know, we're seeing now guys jump from Moto 3
to
Moto
GP. These guys can all adapt.
Yeah, but that's think the Moto 2 bike weighs about the same, has half the horsepower, no rider's aids. I mean, okay, put the stock Honda 600 away and jump on this 250 horsepower thing. It's like, holy crap, right? You mentioned something about the different setup on the different machines. 10 years ago, AMA ran Formula Extreme 600s.
Yep.
Honda took the class seriously, destroyed the field pretty much. Zemke and Duhamel were riding the bikes. Chris Ulrich, racing editor over at Road Racing World, got a chance to ride both of their machines at Miller Motorsport Park. Could not have been two more different bikes, even though they looked identical. It was all in the setup.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, and he said the really remarkable thing, crazy different setups, almost identical lap times.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Different riders. Okay, so let's talk about Pedrosa. What kind of season did he have?
Well,
he was your choice to win the championship.
My choice, and you know what? I'm going to give you a sneak preview. He's in the front running to be my pick for 2016.
He's in the front running to. It's so he,
he's
this
one
is
of
a free,
four. I'm
it's a free prediction. It's oh my god.
So, yeah, right. He had this problem in the beginning, so that you know melted the whole thing down. If you look at what it was at the last four races or something, he had the best total points from those races. But of course, by that time, guys are taking into consideration championships and he didn't have to.
Right.
He definitely dealt with the Honda problems better than Marquez did. I'm really impressed with the mental fortuity to go through those problems stay strong and come back. I was really impressed, you know, and then not only did he, you know, during the time he's getting cut and he's healing, but then taking a step-by-step approach to coming back, to getting back up to speed, et cetera, et cetera. He had a fantastic season. There continues to be a clear 1, 2, 3, 4, big gap until the next guy.
And I will give you this, even though you were completely and utterly wrong.
I was as wrong as you were.
You were more wrong than I was. Because if you look at the final, look at the final points, I'm just saying. But I will give you this, and the race before Pedrosa went and got his surgery, the weekend before that, he put the bike on pole.
He just couldn't go the duration.
Yeah,
of the race.
Yeah, he just couldn't go. But he's got. He's still got the speed.
I think the guy. Yeah, absolutely. The guy who learned the most this year was Marquez.
Oh, no doubt. But we'll get to him in a second. But I will say that the one solid thing that Danny can take away from this season, other than the huge bonuses from his wins, Honda changed his contract from what I'd read, and it's like fairly low base salary and then big bonuses. I mean, that dude had that cool down lap at Motegi. He had to be like, yeah, right? But the best thing he could take away from the season, Pedrosa, was that he had the speed. He still has the speed on his day to ride away from the best in the world, which he did at Sepang.
I think this season for him was a huge confidence builder.
Yeah.
Nobody can go through a season that difficult and be that successful and not go, fuck, I am the man.
I can win.
And right, that's everything. When you get those four guys and you line them up, the skills are the same. The bike is set up perfect in the time that they have, blah, 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 blah. The guy who knows he's better than everybody else is the guy who can win the race. And that's Lorenzo on the grid. When Lorenzo goes to the track and crushes you in all the practices and qualifying sessions,
you may as well not show up on Sunday.
Up, you go like, oh, you know, second place is pretty good.
Ooh, it's going to be a long race, right?
So Marquez learned that it's better to take second sometimes. And it's amazing how hard that lesson can be. It's easy to sit here and go, dude, just take second place. Okay, dude, let's see you in a battle with Rossi.
Right.
And then you remember to take second place.
Yeah, you got to remember not settling for second place is why that 22-year-old is a multimillionaire today.
It's good to be Marquez.
Just what it comes down to.
So what did Honda learn and what did Yamaha learn turns out to be a huge, right? It's like a whole, it's like there's six aliens. Right, there's the four riders.
Good point.
And, right, because if the odds are Honda learned, they're not going to have that same problem next year.
Have you been reading about the engine stuff that's going on now?
Well, you know, it's hard to trust what you read. I haven't been trying to follow.
Okay,
right?
No.
What do they really know?
Then that's the point. They don't. But what we can see from the outside, from observing the orbit of Neptune, we can kind of infer the presence of Pluto. Rumors are coming out that at the next test. The satellite bikes are not going to have new engines. They might not even have new chassis for Honda. Honda, from what we can infer from that, is Honda looked at the 2016 motor that they brought out at the end of last season for the postseason test and went, not good, not good. And what they're doing is their usual approach is to show up with a bunch of stuff at the first test that's really well sorted and fine-tune it. It looks like what they're going to be forced to do is look at the McLaren approach to race vehicle development, which is think, test, and only at the last minute settle on a spec, which is not normal. That's not normally their way of going about it.
The process by which it comes about doesn't really matter.
No,
what matters is the final decision they make.
Right.
And we won't know until a little ways into the season.
But I'll tell you what they have learned. You asked, what has Honda learned this year? They learned that they can't settle on that spec that early anymore. They're going to have to test up to the very end.
The other big variation is they've got a lot to learn about the new electronics.
Yeah, are shit.
So if I were Yamaha, I'd be thinking, I'm pretty happy. I've got an engine that's proven, and I just got to focus on those electronics. If Yamaha comes back with the same bike with the electronics worked out, they're in a really strong place. They're going to be in a really strong place for the first few races. Honda has to fix their engine problem and learn the electronics.
Right, and let alone the
Michelin. And they got the wildest rider in the world. Fortunately, they have a steady guy to back him up. So again, both camps have a strong. It's going to be another great season.
Your Yamaha folks, by the way, might have an advantage with that electronics package from early on. And the Ducati people, we're going to talk about them briefly. Ducati was a factory that helped build that spec electronics suite. Yeah. As a matter of fact, to the extent that other teams were complaining that the spec package was just the Ducati package. And a couple of years ago, when that thing first hit, was it last season? I forget. I can't remember my timeline now. But Yamaha actually worked with the Forward team and said, we will help you with that. And those Yamaha was working with that package and that satellite team, or that satellite team, as I call them, back at their factory to try to get that working. I think they're going to reap the benefits of that early in the season. Honda's got some catching up to do. On the other hand, you know, do you really bet against them, their ability to catch up and sort it out? Everybody talks about what a shit bike the Honda was last year. It won 7 races.
Yeah, no, there's no shit bike.
Marquez won 5 races last year.
The other factor in all of this, of course, is the tires.
Right.
And who adapts the tires best. Boy, if those tires turn out to be Lorenzo tires, it's all over and done. Nobody will touch that guy, right? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Wait, we got a 2-minute board.
Okay.
2-minute board. I got one. It's a shout out, mad props to a guy who races in British Superbike by the name of Chris Walker. I don't know if Chris has ever been champion. He's been a perennial front runner for a very long time.
I recognize the name, so he's been doing it for a while.
Exactly. Couldn't get a front line ride this year. And, you know, he's older, he's been beat up, he's one of those guys that won't tell you his real age, you know, that kind of deal, right? And so, faced with the lack of an ability to get a 2-wheeled ride, he switched to 3 wheels, and he's going to race on a frickin' sidecar. That's a guy who wants to race.
Is he the monkey or the driver?
The driver. Now, you don't want to throw your 50-year-old monkey down the road, man. That's bad. That's bad.
I wonder how many sidecar guys we just pissed off.
Oh, probably.
We're called passengers.
Probably, exactly. No, whatever. On the other hand, I wonder if he's going to be able to get a sidecar passenger. Because do you really want that? That guy's like, holy crap, this thing's not going to fall over.
Well, the word that I got from Bruce Lind, who earned 6 AMA sidecar championships,
mm-hmm.
Was that it's the driver who gets hurt because the monkey falls off and slides down the road like a regular crash, but the driver's trapped in the car, in the outfit, and
the thing
tips over, he gets crushed.
Weren't Bruce's sidecars powered by the TZ750
motors? Yep.
Holy crap, dude. That had to be one terrifying ride. Nothing but props for Bruce. Hey, he's Ed Sorbo.
He's Michael Gugis.
Aloha.